It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. How vulnerable would you feel if the police could seize your phone without a search warrant? Is it even constitutional? The issue has been placed front and center in two cases argued before the Supreme Court last week. The cases involve a longstanding exception to the Fourth Amendment that permits the police to search items on or near someone they have arrested without a warrant. I'm joined now in Studio A by Pitt Law Professor David Harris. David, thanks again for being here.
Good to be with you, Paul.
I'm glad you're here because this is a thorny issue and we need to walk through this. It's something that people may have heard about in the news and would dramatically impact all of us as citizens of the United States.
I think you're right.
What is the basic issue here?
The basic issue, Paul, is that the Fourth Amendment has long allowed for police to search any person that they arrest for anything. They search for the purpose of finding weapons that could cause an injury or death or something to the officer or anybody else around, and to preserve evidence so it can't be destroyed. So when the officer arrests somebody, they can look in the pockets, take out the wallet, look through the wallet, look in the cigarette package, things like that. Those things have been clear for a long time.
And they do not need a warrant for this?
They do not need a warrant for that. What the government is pressing now is that if the police find a cell phone, they want to be able to open and turn on that cell phone and not just look at it, but look through it. Okay? So they don't want to search it as an object. They want to search it as a storage device. They want to look at all your data. They want to look at your contacts. They want to look at your tweets, your texts, everything without a warrant. And the argument here is, isn't this different than just looking at the five photos in a wallet? That's the example that came up in the Supreme Court last week. The government was arguing, well, this is just like looking at the photos in a wallet. And one of the justices said, well, a wallet holds five photos. My phone could have thousands. And not just your photos, but all kinds of very personal, financial, medical, personal information, anything you could imagine, because, as Justice Kagan said during the argument, people live on their phones these days.
So is this a matter of the law not keeping up with technology, not anticipating, for example, in so many cases, there are things that our founding fathers who established the Constitution
yes.
could not have envisioned?
Absolutely.
And so is this a case of, yes, a cell phone is personal property in many ways. It is like a wallet, and yet because of its multidimensional technical uses, it stores so much information that there should be something more that is required for a law enforcement officer to look through this.
Absolutely. You know, the law is always a little bit behind technology. Technology just marches forward, becomes better, sharper, smaller, more capable. The law is always catching up. We know that. And they couldn't have envisioned something like cell phones. How about even telephones? None of that was part of the landscape when the Fourth Amendment was adopted back in the 1700s. But the concepts that are in the Fourth Amendment, I would say, give us a lot of instructions and the historical background. The Fourth Amendment and the Constitution was really motivated in large part because agents of the British government were going in and searching without warrants or with very general, nondescriptive warrants. And that was a major grievance behind the Revolution. And so we've seen—
And remind people what the Fourth Amendment is. It's unwarranted search and seizure.
Yeah, the Fourth Amendment says that people shall be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures of their persons, houses, papers, and that if you have a warrant— if you're talking about, it has to be based on probable cause.
So there are historical roots to this argument.
Absolutely. So, of course, no cell phones or telephones then, but they did not want searches of persons, houses, papers, and effects without probable cause and without warrants. And the cell phone is not simply an object like a wallet. I think we all understand that. Anybody who's got a smartphone, your internet searches are there, your texts are there. It is really a storage of your entire digital trail, and more life is lived in the digital world. Now, just because we have digitized our records and they're no longer on paper does not mean that our records should not be protected in the same way. And we're not saying that the police should never be able to look through a cell phone. All we're saying is that when they seize a cell phone, they got to hold it status quo until a court signs off with a warrant.
You can join our conversation with Pitt Law Professor David Harris about this whole idea of law enforcement officers being able to seize your phone without a search warrant. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. How do you feel about the police being able to seize your phone without a search warrant? 412-246-2002 to get in on the conversation with our guest, Pitt Law Professor David Harris. And David, law enforcement, for its part, says that it needs to be able to search these devices because the information in them helps catch criminals. Is that not true?
It certainly can be true. And nobody's saying they can't seize the object when they arrest somebody. The question is, can they look through it? Can they make a thorough search or even copy the whole thing onto their own devices to search through later? And sometimes, if the police do search through the entire storage capacity of a phone, they will catch criminals. They will find valuable evidence. But most of the time, they will not. And those are the times that one could be concerned about, because without a warrant, they would have access to all the data on that phone. No third party, no disinterested third party to kind of stand between the police and the citizen and say, wait a minute, you can look for this but not for that. Or you don't have probable cause, you can't look through the phone. That's the function of a search warrant. That's the function of the judge in that situation. It's not a high bar for the police to meet. They do it all the time. They don't have to even go into court. It can be done by phone. But it puts a neutral third party between the natural inclination of any police department, which is to find as much stuff as it can and gather as much stuff as it can and sort it out later, and the restraints of the Constitution, which say, look, you just have to have a reason. You can't go into somebody's house and just look at everything. That would be like what the British did. Right now, right, the argument is the cell phone is like the house. It is the digital house.
I just was going to say that this is really, there are historical roots to this. And even though our founding fathers could not have anticipated the technology, they did establish the idea that, you know, nobody can go into your house and ransack it without just cause, without good reason or a warrant, because, I mean, this is your whole life. You are being, in a sense, violated when someone can look at all this stuff about you. And as you say, what was part of the house, the thing that the founding fathers were concerned about hundreds of years ago, is now, it can be put in your pocket.
That's right.
And it's on this device, and that the argument here against this kind of search and seizure is that they can go in and look at your whole life and invade your privacy without just cause.
Exactly.
They being the law enforcement.
Yes. And I know law enforcement has a tough job. I know that they want to catch the bad guys. I am not standing in the way of that at all. I would never say anything like that. What I would say is this. Back in the colonial times, your very personal information, you'd probably put it in a diary or it would be in your private letters. And you would take those and leave them in your house, maybe lock them in a drawer or a cabinet somewhere. That is what you find in a cell phone, your communications, your personal communications, your where you went every day, your calendar, the record that your GPS makes of your movements. To say that that stuff is accessible to the government without a warrant, I think would really disturb the founding fathers. They wanted those personal things protected. That's why the Fourth Amendment says no unreasonable searches of your persons, houses, papers, and effects. Get a warrant with probable cause.
Now, it always comes back to this argument, but there are those who would argue for the police who would say that the police should be able to search anything on the arrested person, that there is no exception of privacy for things carried on the person. Even though you've got this multi-dimensional device, we're living in dangerous times. We can't afford to mess around. If you are arrested, that is fair game.
And that is exactly the argument that came up last week in the Supreme Court argument, that if you want to have privacy in a device, in an object, the government said you should leave it at home. And Justice Kagan sort of responded incredulously.
Who's going to leave their phone?
Exactly. You wouldn't leave this thing at home. That's the whole point. It's to be portable and mobile and to have digitized versions of everything so that you can be moving around. That's the nature of life, and it's the nature of commerce now. So to keep to the same standard and say, well, if you've got it on you, it's fair game, to me, that does not recognize the reality of where we are. And the Supreme Court doesn't always have a great record on understanding technology and how it should fit within the law.
Well, and what we've also seen lately is there's now a conservative majority on the court, and we're seeing conservative decisions being handed down on a number of issues, such as offering prayer at public meetings, that kind of thing. So if the Supreme Court decides that they want to err on the side of being conservative, then we could very well end up seeing something that allows this, could we not?
Absolutely, we could. And the conservative position generally, not always, but generally lines up with a favorable view of whatever law enforcement wants. Now, there is, you know, if you put it just in terms of what law enforcement wants, it may come out that way. But there, the conflicting value here is privacy. And I think everybody has some interest in privacy. We've had a huge national discussion over the last year about the NSA leaks and database searches and so forth. That same kind of concern for privacy comes out here.
We're talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris, and we're headed for a break, but we have callers on the line, and we will get to you after our break. Alan and McCandless, Charlotte and Bethel Park, Steve and Duquesne, hang on. You are welcome to join the discussion at 412-246-2002. It's a lively one as we discuss the idea of police seizing your phone without a search warrant. Is it constitutional? We'll take a break and continue the discussion. You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're discussing the issue of police seizing cell phones without a search warrant. Is it constitutional? The issue has been placed in front of the Supreme Court. Two cases argued before the High Court last week. Cases involving a longstanding exception to the Fourth Amendment that permits the police to search items on or near someone they have arrested without a warrant. Pitt Law Professor David Harris is here discussing the issue, and you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. David, are you ready for some phone calls?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start with Alan in McCandless. Alan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Alan.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your comment or question.
My comment is this. Some folks claim that one's cell phone is analogous to one's wallet. I hold that that's a ridiculous contention, almost as ridiculous as the fact that some people still claim that the world is flat. Obviously not the case. The other thing, as far as a person being arrested, and the police searching their cell phone absent the warrant, what happens, as is often the case, when the arrest is discharged, i.e. found inappropriate or wrong? The police have entered without a warrant the private person and property of a citizen, violating the devil out of the Fourth Amendment. How is the citizen made whole?
That's a great question, Alan, and I think it also brings up the notion of how long are police keeping information. If they download your information from your iPhone, how long is that kept on file?
Well, let me first agree with Alan that I wholeheartedly agree that comparing a cell phone and all its capabilities these days, a smartphone, to a wallet is a silly analogy, and yet the government was in there doing it last week in the Supreme Court. But your other question, Alan, if there is an arrest and if the police don't need a warrant to search through the data on your cell phone – and they find something that incriminates you, and the arrest is discharged, let's say, the following week, that evidence that they found will still be legitimate to use against you because it was found during a legitimate search if the Supreme Court doesn't require a warrant. And that shows you just how far-reaching a ruling in favor of the government would be in this set of cases. In other words, and I got to say, you can be arrested for a lot of things. And most arrests might not even go forward into a full-blown case. You can be arrested in most jurisdictions for traffic offenses, some jurisdictions for a seatbelt offense. And once you are arrested, they can search you. It does not matter what the offense is. The Supreme Court has already said that. If they also have the right to look through your data without a warrant, any data they find in there will be usable against you, even if the arrest is later found to be bogus.
And so the information that they collect, they can keep it for how long?
There is no limit, as far as I know. And that brings us squarely to the debate we've been having in the last year. How would you feel if they just took all that data and downloaded it into some database? And it could just hang around basically forever until somebody found it useful. It would be searchable by law enforcement, and who knows who else.
Ad infinitum.
There's no reason why not.
So there's no law in the books that says, you know, you keep this information for 90 days and then it's
– No, there is no law like that. Now, a legislature can say in Pennsylvania any data collected will be purged if the arrest is found to be invalid.
That would be done on a state-by-state basis?
State by state. Congress could do it too, but I don't look for it coming from Congress. A state could do it even if the Congress did not, but you'd have to persuade your state legislature to do it.
Interesting. Alan, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Charlotte in Bethel Park. Charlotte, thanks for waiting. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I think it should be made pretty simple that your cell phone and what you have in the internet or on your computers and things is your new paper, and that even the wallet is part of your effects. And this just seems to be a slippery slope. You know, if it starts at the wallet, it's going further and further. And why can't they, why are they allowed to just search anything when they arrest you? It should be pretty clear what you're getting arrested for and pretty obvious, and they shouldn't have to need to search everything about you.
Well, that's
new
paper, well,
so you're
the
saying
cell phone or even the wallet. I think it's a slippery slope that society just lets little things happen one by one by one. And
right. So you're saying, Charlotte, that it should not be a technological consideration, that it's anything, whether it's your cell phone or your wallet, something you're carrying on your person should not be searched without a warrant.
Absolutely. And I get the point that Charlotte is making, and it's a good one. We debate this every year in my criminal procedure class when we do the Robinson case. My students will remember that. And in that case, the Supreme Court basically says, look, the search upon arrest is for collecting any evidence that might be destroyed and for securing the officer and anybody around there from the danger of a weapon. And yet, the Supreme Court in that case said, we don't actually care if there's any danger of a weapon or any evidence that might be tampered with. We're just going to say any arrest, a full search of all the objects, because in most cases it can be that evidence is destroyed. And that is that's the slippery slope right there. We went down it and we lost that argument a long time ago. That's why the argument really now has shifted to the technology, to say, okay, you can search certain things, but the founding fathers would never have allowed, say, the search of a diary, even if you were carrying it around with you. Therefore, a cell phone is not like a wallet. It's like a diary.
Charlotte, thank you for that phone call. Let's go to Steve in Duquesne. Steve, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Professor Harris. Professor Harris, I think I'm going to have to take one of your courses. I'm getting more questions in my head as I'm listening to you. But
that's a good sign.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I tend to see that the Supreme Court is making decisions that lack some context in our current time. And in my opinion, McCutcheon and Citizens United are good examples of that. It seems as though the justices are not particularly tech savvy. So my question to you is basically, how should we expect the rulings to be in tune with the times? When I hear Justice Scalia described as an originalist, that worries me. I also think about things about your interpretation or their interpretation as things as granular as effects. I wonder about reasonable suspicion leading to a stop and whether that opens the door to this. There are so many things. Could you just kind of talk about that a bit?
Absolutely. Let me begin by standing up for the court, at least this far. The court has to have reference to general constitutional principles and make decisions not just for today and today's reality, but for tomorrow and the day after. So they can't be concerned with what is going on right now entirely. They have to have a longer range view, and I think the justices said that. Now, having gone that far, though, I would agree with you 100%. They don't have a great record on understanding technology. And an example I'd give you is Maryland versus King, which was decided sometime in the last 2 years, a DNA case in which the court basically said, oh, well, we're going to allow DNA searches upon arrest because it will help identify people when they won't give up their own identities. Well, did anybody explain to the justices that DNA analysis doesn't work like on CSI, that it takes 3 or 4 months? It wouldn't be a very good tool for identifying, getting somebody's name. So I really do share your skepticism about that. And it's one of the reasons that it would be good if rules on technology were made at the level of the state legislature. At least they can respond in roughly real time and change the rules as technology changes. The law, as decided by courts, is a really slow instrument for dealing with new technologies. So I hope that maybe because in this instance, more justices than not will have cell phones, will understand how far-reaching this decision would be, would at least have that much tech savvy. But in general, I agree. They just usually kind of miss the boat on technology.
Steve, thank you for a great phone call. David, the federal government predicted big trouble for the police if the court required a warrant. Why?
Well, the argument there was that the savvy criminals would use encryption and remote devices to destroy all the data that's in the cell phone before the police could get their hands on it. I think that's a non-concern, frankly, because those who are savvy enough to use encryption under a system with no warrants are already doing that. There's no doubt about it. That arms race is already on. And the police would be free to seize the cell phone, hold it in status quo, even make a full recording of all the data without viewing it while they waited to get the warrant. And the wait is not long. I mean, you can get a warrant in half an hour if you have probable cause telephonically, and I'm sure some places over the internet.
412-246-2002 if you'd like to join the conversation in the time we have remaining with Pitt Law Professor David Harris, talking about the issue of police seizing cell phones, your phone, without a search warrant. Is it constitutional? How do you feel about it? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Let's go to Ron in North Hills. Ron, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you. To the question as to whether the Supreme Court is unaware of technology, I have a hard time believing that, and I would posit that the Supreme Court is very much aware of technology and all the permutations of it, and that they are basically hiding behind this concept that they don't know this or that as a way to legislate from the bench, which is eminently clear. And just one more quick comment.
You're saying, Ron, before you go on to make your next comment, so you're saying that there's always been this insinuation or this suspicion people have about judicial agenda, legislating from the bench, as you put it. So you're saying that the Supreme Court is sort of playing dumb?
That's probably a simple a way to put it as possible. I mean, clearly these are highly educated people. They understand technology. They all have laptops and computers and tablets and cell phones. These aren't stupid people, but these are people, as I think a lot of people would agree, that have an agenda.
Well, it's an interesting idea, and they are smart people. No one would disagree with that. But do they, Ron says, David, that they all have cell phones. They're all tech savvy. Do you think they are?
I don't. I respectfully disagree with Ron on this. Undoubtedly, some use laptops and computers, and undoubtedly many, maybe most, have cell phones. But I, you know, I know many highly educated, smart people in their 70s and 80s, and some of them, you know, they just don't want to go there. They don't really understand it. They have a secretary operate the devices for them. Are they perhaps hiding behind that sort of protestation of ignorance? I can't say they're not. Maybe they are, but
these are older ladies
all
and gentlemen,
basically older folks. But what I do see is that they have seemed to have gotten some of the basics of the technology really sincerely wrong in their opinions. And when I see that, it's hard for me to believe that based on ideology, they'd make a mistake about how the technology works. They're more likely to simply ignore the technology and make the argument based on their ideology. So I think I would respectfully disagree, Ron.
Thank you for that phone call. David, here's a key question, I think. Does the court in this case, in order to, as we try to come up with a solution, perhaps, and you're as smart a guy as any to maybe weigh in on this, does the court have the capacity to design a search so that it meets law enforcement needs in a particular case but does not needlessly expose our private information?
Well, it could, I suppose, but that's not really its job. But that's where maybe we should go to Ron's point now in the sense of legislating from the bench. You don't really want judges to make rules for particular sorts of searches or cases. You want them on the level of general constitutional principles so that their decisions can stand not just today in this particular case, but for tomorrow and the years after. So what I want from them is to make rules that make sense as technology expands. And I want the legislative branches to come in and make the particular rules that we need from something like, let's say, ubiquitous cell phone cameras. The Supreme Court shouldn't be telling us how that technology works, doesn't work, what we should do with it. They should make general rules, constitutional rules, and leave the specifics of each case to other bodies.
Any other, in the few seconds we have left, any other dangers here that we should be concerned about?
Well, the danger is, to go back to one of the other callers, that we go down the digital slippery slope and we say that a cell phone is no different than a wallet or a letter or something like that. That's just not true. And if we ignore the realities around us that are changing life, we will find the law so far behind that we simply can't catch up and our privacy will be gone before we even know it.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris joining us. As always, David, great thanks.
It was my pleasure, Paul. Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation with the man bringing Pittsburgh its first Fringe Festival. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.